This is CliffCentral.com. Future CEOs on CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to Future CEOs here on Cliff Central. My name is Gareth Armstrong. It is good to be with you. And what do we do on the show? Well, we bring the best and brightest into studio. Those who are experienced, those who are, you know, some of them I think have gone through the business mill a few times, the startup mill, and we learn from their experiences. Some of them are senior executives. A few weeks ago, we had a couple of CEOs here in the studio, and we learn from them. We ask them questions about their journey, and we try and make sure that all of you and us here as well are able to not bump our heads as often as, well, sometimes our in-studio guests do. Simon, Daniel, have you guys bumped your heads a few times?
Not yet, actually.
Okay, well, that's a good thing.
A bunch of times.
A bunch of times.
Yeah.
Well, elaborate a little bit on that, please.
Well, I mean, I've done quite a few things in my career. Mm. Some have worked, some haven't worked. And I think that's useful. I think it's useful to have a couple of failures or speed bumps along the way that you can learn from. Mm. It's the kind of thing you don't really learn in a business book. They make it seem really simple, and if you build it, they'll come. Mm. And then you make profit, and they don't kind of fill in the gaps.
It's interesting that you say that you have bumped your head a few times. I sat with Gil Overt. He was one of the Dragons Den Dragons, also the Sharks now, more recently. And he described how if he could choose between two entrepreneurs, one of them never having failed and one of them having failed, he would pick the person that has failed a few times, albeit they have to have picked themselves up. How do you feel about the idea that you haven't quite bumped your head just yet?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I find that when I'm trying to decide sort of who to learn from or what books to read, I tend to gravitate towards books about people and their failures and stories about failure more so than success. So one example would be Nick Harry, the Sox guy, and his recent book, Do Fail, Learn, Repeat, I think that's the name.
Okay, yeah.
And he talks a lot about failing and how that's the best way to learn. And so I really enjoy learning from people who have failed and learning what not to do. Often you hear stories about people that have been successful, and they probably struggled along the way and probably failed along the way and hit a lot of speed bumps, but they're such distant memories that they sort of don't elaborate and give much detail, and it's difficult to learn from that.
It is difficult to learn from that. And I think because the devil is often in the detail and the learning is in the detail.
Exactly. And so I love learning from people. There was another book actually by an American guy who started a fintech business similar to ours who failed. In the space of 3 years, he built a huge business with book of over $300 million, I think it was, in 3 years. And then everything came falling down, and he wrote a book. And he didn't write the book after he had then gone on to be successful on a new business or anything. He wrote the book straight after he failed. Mm. And I found that to be incredibly refreshing compared to many other business type books that I've read, because the sort of the failure was still so raw and fresh in his mind.
There was also a bit of a kinship, I think you must have felt, because it was a very similar business. Simon, let's stop and just introduce who everyone is here in the room. Who would like to go first, Simon?
Sure. So I'm the co-founder and CTO, and
Dan Goldberg. I am the co-founder and CEO of Bridgement.
Okay, Bridgement. So let's have the CTO version of a 30-second called elevator pitch of what Bridgement is, and then let's go with the CEO version and see how well they correlate.
Here we go. This is the interview test. So one of the big issues with small businesses, particularly consulting businesses, is you do work for a customer and you invoice them, and you've got to wait for payment terms to kick in to actually get the money. So what we do is we look at these outstanding invoices, and we use that as a way to then provide a loan to that business.
Okay.
With the promise that the invoice is going to get paid at some point.
Mm. How accurate was that, Mr. CEO?
Spot on. I mean, maybe just to add a little bit more detail, Fundamentally, Bridgeman is a fintech business with the primary aim of simplifying finance for small businesses. It's very difficult for small businesses to access finance in South Africa. I mean, it's a global problem, but it is particularly difficult in South Africa. You know, a business can spend 5 weeks applying to a bank, to get a loan and usually get turned away. Mm. And they just don't have the time to spend applying for those loans. And it's also, most of them are not getting access to that finance that they need. And so we're trying to solve that problem with, quick online paperless finance for SMEs. And Simon alluded to our first product, which is an invoice-based product, where essentially we give advances on invoices that SMEs are waiting to get paid.
Yeah, so it's essentially underwritten by the promise that there will be payment.
Precisely.
Which has its own risk, but you bear that risk. And you're helping SMEs with this the ever-present burden and problem of cash flow. I think that's
exactly
the answer, right?
Exactly.
Sean.
So, Lee, where I want us to go is not so much on the business side. I want to understand the dynamic that exists here, because it's one thing to start a business. It's another thing to start and run a business with a partner. You guys are co-founders, except you've also got a bit of a staggered entry into the business, Simon. Let's talk a little bit about where this business came from, how the idea came together, and then I'm interested in this dynamic that you guys have.
Yeah. So maybe I should start off talking a bit about where the idea came from and sort of my background.
Please.
So, I mean, firstly, I've always been a tinkerer, problem solver, a maker. Mm. But I've also at the same time, and that sort of led me down this path of engineering. So I went to WITS and studied biomedical and electrical engineering. Mm. But I was also always interested in business and finance. And so I ended up going...
So I just want to interrupt you there on that point. But how did you move into a focus, though, or have you not?
No, it's a great question. So towards the end of university, I realized I'd never wanted to practice as an engineer. As much as I loved technology, I was interested in building technology businesses as opposed to, being practicing as an engineer. And so I realized I needed to learn more about finance and about business. Mm. At that stage, the sort of extent of my financial knowledge was probably matric accounts.
Interesting. and now you're running an organization that assists with finance. Yeah. Interesting.
And by the way, I mean, just having taken accounts in school has been hugely valuable, Anyway, so towards the end of engineering, I realized I needed to learn more about business and finance. And so I went to work for one of the top tier management consulting companies, one of the American ones that whose name has been in the news a lot recently for all the wrong reasons, Bain and Company.
Okay. Yeah.
I got a lot of valuable experience there, and they stuck me pretty much in their finance division. So I was consulting to banks and other large corporates, both in South Africa and in Nigeria.
But you don't just walk into Bain, though.
No.
So are you a bit of a whiz kid, or were you a whiz kid, and you're just a whiz now?
He's the whiz of Excel.
Okay.
My girlfriend likes to boast that I'm one of the Mensa kids.
Okay.
But I find that a bit embarrassing. I've always just loved learning and love understanding how things work. Working at Bain and working in finance, consulting to banks and other large corporates, I really got a first-hand view or insight into how banks operate. Mm. And the other interesting thing is, when you see a bank on the back end running off Excel spreadsheets, it really just screams opportunity.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yeah. Wow.
And so it was really at that point where, I realized and this was probably about 2 years in, I realized, it's time to start my own thing. Mm. I have this newfound passion or interest in finance. I still love tech. Fintech is the route to take.
Mm.
And so I left Bain to join some other guys that I actually studied with to start another fintech company, which is still running and doing really well. And that is a sort of a financial regulatory compliance startup. Bit of a mouthful, but essentially it's solving the problem of FICA.
Sounds much more boring than Bridgement does.
Exactly. I mean, as sexy as regulatory compliance sounds.
Thank you, Daniel. Simon, a little bit about yourself. And then what I'm really interested in, because you are regarded as co-founder, except you came in much later than Daniel. So let's talk about your background and then a little bit of that as well, please.
Sure. So I'm very much focused on the tech side, and it's always been a passion of mine.
Okay.
And I think being a little bit older than Dan, it just meant that I grew up in a time when you had to put more effort into the computers. Mm-hmm. You couldn't just click a few buttons and have kind of servers appear and things like that. Which was a good time to get involved. But actually, after school, I studied chiropractic for a few years.
Okay.
So I'm a med school dropout with the air quotes around med school.
Yeah, lovely.
But then after that, I went into tech. And I've been very much involved in very much hands-on.
Mm.
I'm not someone that strives to get into management or anything like that.
Sure, okay. So you're the nerd.
Exactly, yeah.
Which is a great title to have.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
And then, so how did this relationship then come about?
Good question. I mean, from the outset, as I started Bridgement, I realized I needed a founder or co-founder, I should say, or two. I think the chances of success are so greatly improved or increased when you have multiple guys trying to tackle the problem and just be sounding boards for each other and bringing different skill sets and ideas. I realized it was so critical. However, I was unable to find the right person at the right time. I saw there was a massive opportunity in the market, and so for the sake of sort of not missing it and getting going, I initially actually just worked with a contractor. I hired a contractor.
Which feels like it could be risky.
Massively risky. Mm. I think I was able to mitigate that risk because of my experience in tech. And so I was able to really see what the guy was doing and not just having to take his word for it.
Mm.
And that sort of enabled me to continue, pursuing this goal of getting this fintech business up and running. And I never ever stopped looking for that co-founder. So I spent a good year and a bit, meeting with different people, just networking, trying to find the right partner from a tech point of view. And it was actually a mutual friend that made an introduction, and we hit it off pretty quickly. I haven't looked back. It's been amazing having him on board.
Yeah, we've had interesting conversations in studio between co-founders before, and what we've realized is that it actually is a relationship, much like a marriage, and there can be so-called love at first sight. And is that your experience, Simon?
What do you mean, that it's all downhill from the first meeting?
Yeah, probably not certainly not Daniel. But how did you feel about being asked to come into a business? I mean, there's also a dynamic when you're given a certain opportunity to be a so-called co-founder, but you're not really the co-founder. It didn't originate with you. Just a couple of feelings.
Sure. I mean, that's fair. Definitely the business idea and the initial kind of momentum came from Dan.
Mm.
But I think it adds a lot to the business to have more than one founder.
It definitely does, yeah.
Even if it wasn't a day one founder.
Mm.
So it's very much for the strength of the business and continuity. So that's what it is.
What's so wonderful about it as well is there's a certain accountability that often is missing in single solopreneur type ventures. You need that other person to push you and to measure you to a certain extent. There's some really nice quotes about how when performance is measured, performance improves. When performance is measured and reported, so in other words, you're made accountable, that the rate of improvement goes through the roof, becomes exponential potentially.
Absolutely. And I think, any startup is a bit of a roller coaster of emotions.
Mm.
And having someone to share the highs as well as the lows with is really important.
Mm.
If you're a solo founder, those lows are probably a lot lower or more difficult to work your way through. And so, it totally makes sense.
So you use the word hits it off. which is an interesting phrase. How did you guys then realize that there was actually something that could be worked here? Because you were talking about you weren't meeting the right people, so that speaks to a misalignment. What had to align for you to be able to say Simon is the person? And then Simon, for yourself, why did you decide to leave what you were doing and join Dan in this, what can often be a risky venture or quest?
I think it was really finding someone that shared a passion in using tech and the latest tech to solve big problems. A lot of the guys that I'd met previously didn't really share that passion.
How did you know that, though? Because people can use words, but how do you see through that?
I don't know what it is. I mean, I think it's just a bit of a sense that I had of Simon, but also seeing the way he had worked previously and some of the projects he had done for himself and for, you know, working with other people. It just drew me towards him quite a lot. I thought he would fit so well into the team and helping me and us tackle the problem.
Mm. And then yourself, Simon, why here? Why now?
So for a long time, I've run my own small business, and it was definitely a new venture that I could relate to.
Mm.
And even though the first offering, like Dan said, is around the invoices, that was a problem that I definitely faced as a consulting business. So being able to find financing without having to go via the banks, which just seems like such a punitive thing to do when you interact with banks, it was definitely something that I could see the need for.
What's interesting is you're talking about scratching your own itch, and we've heard that time and time again. Often businesses come out of scratching your own itch. Where did this business idea come from, Simon? I beg your pardon, Daniel.
So at my previous fintech startup, it was really, we had huge exposure to the financial services industry, playing in financial regulatory compliance. And so having interacted with all of these other financial institutions, as well as the previous consulting and working with banks, I realized that there was a problem there and that SMEs were not being serviced adequately. Also, at our previous company, being an SME, a small business, I saw firsthand what happens when cash flow is slow or dries up. And the decisions you're forced to make and the situations you're put in, it's a big problem. It's a bit cliche, but it is the number one killer of all businesses, And so, the credit gap for small businesses in South Africa, the credit gap just being, the amount of credit or finance needed by SMEs that are not getting it, is estimated anywhere from 80 billion rand to multiples more. So there really is a big need for it. That drew me toward, that seemed like a significant big problem that I was interested in solving. Obviously taking inspiration from a lot of the innovation that we've seen internationally, but then looking at how we could incorporate those learnings and innovate in South Africa. The invoice finance product is just one of the first ways in which we're solving that problem. You hear people complaining about late payments from government and large corporates all the time, and that really puts a lot of strain on businesses. I've heard some corporates have a fixed payment period of 120 days. So a business needs to deliver a service or a product, incur all the costs, pay rent, pay salaries, raw materials, and then sit around waiting for 4 months to get paid. That's just mind-blowing. That's one of the primary causes of cash flow problems for businesses. And so it was a great place to start tackling that problem with this invoice finance product.
So the it's an interesting question. Sorry, Simon, this is not going to go to you. The first 6 months, that's always an adventure. What were your feelings? There's so many different phases to that as well. There's the first week, which is exciting and fantastic, or maybe not. Maybe it's damn scary.
It was definitely damn scary.
But then talk us through that feeling.
So firstly, one of the biggest things I remember is just being a solo founder. It's lonely. And
immediately lonely.
And I do not advise it at all. It was scary. I mean, it was a big task. Starting a finance business is a big task. Not just from a tech point of view, but also from a capital point of view. I mean, we're our sort of capital requirements are very different to any other tech startup, where you can, you know, put together some tech, some software, and hopefully launch an MVP without incurring massive costs.
Yeah, very bootstrappable, easily bootstrappable.
Exactly. Yeah. But when you're starting a finance business, and you know that the first to go live, you have to give finance to a customer, which is going to be in the range of a couple of hundred thousand or a million rand, whatever it is. And so it's a lot more capital intensive, a much sort of, I don't want to say more difficult, but...
well, there's a risk there.
Yeah,
there's much more risk involved.
Absolutely.
Around that kind of thing. Yeah.
Absolutely. So those first 6 months were tough, definitely lonely. Huge roller coaster of emotions, but also at the same time exciting. I mean, building a brand new product in South Africa that I truly felt, and we're seeing it now, you know, really helps SMEs solve cash flow problems. Mm. That excitement trumped any of the loneliness or the FUD, as the crypto guys like to call it, fear, yeah, uncertainty, or doubt.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So let's talk a little bit about some of the challenges that you guys have faced. I mean, of course, there are going to be some of the run-of-the-mill things that any co-founding team may endure or experience. Maybe you can pinpoint one of the biggest challenges you guys have faced, maybe share an experience, and then what did you take out of that?
Well, I think it's been really important to keep a really tight monitor on what's happening in terms of the actual technology.
Okay.
And that can be pretty all-consuming. Because of the way that Dan started the company, it's very much a remote-first mindset, even if we're in the office together. Mm. So we've been able to use some really interesting technology to keep track of what's going on and where potential performance bottlenecks are and things like that. So that's been a really interesting journey from a tech point of view.
Okay. Do you have a particular challenge that stands out in your mind as something that probably could have been avoided, but you didn't, maybe you didn't even know better, and you just had to take it head on?
Hmm. Good question. Yeah, I think in the early days, this was probably in the first month, I initially hired a contractor developer to start building out the platform. Mm. And as I mentioned before, you know, being an engineer, having a lot of tech and development experience, I felt that I was able to mitigate any sort of risks, mm, from a tech point of view and the quality of the tech that the contractor was putting out. What I didn't foresee was hiring the wrong type of contractor who was, okay, not going to be able to fulfill, you know, what we were agreeing to. And so looking back, how that ended up was basically after a month, just ended up parting ways and finding a new contractor who has been amazing and worked with for a very long time. Mm. But, you know, looking back, I think I probably jumped into it a bit too quickly. Okay. I think I was so keen to get going, and I felt like I was missing the boat, you know.
Okay, so it was anxiety that pushed you, not a sense of overconfidence or maybe even arrogance. So,
I mean, it's definitely possible. I think, okay, it's probably a bit of both. You know, one of the key learnings there was just that, you know, the sort of level of communication amongst team members, whether contractors, full-time, part-time guys, it's so important to communicate clearly and effectively all the time. Mm. And as soon as that breaks down, it's really difficult to move on or recover from there.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with saying to someone, I need you to do this. Now tell me what you think I need you to do.
Yeah.
Because communication is a two-way street.
Absolutely.
And I mean, it's not necessarily you standing in an authoritative position where you're telling someone what to do, because they need that feedback from them as, mm-hmm, well. But it's get the feedback. You can't just transmit or broadcast and think that you've been heard or understood, because that's not communication.
Absolutely. And that's so true in the space that we're in, especially, you know, you're working with you might be working with tech people, software developers, and you're explaining complicated financial concepts and algorithms and things like that that they're not familiar with. You know, many developers that I've worked with in the past don't know what an accounts receivable is. Simon does. He's owned his own business, so he's had an amazing combination of those skill sets or knowledge. But you know, communicating those sorts of concepts to technical people that might not have a financial background is complicated, and so useful to get them to almost confirm and repeat what you've just explained to them.
We released a podcast last week. It was a conversation that I had with the CEO of the Da Vinci Institute, a remarkable individual, very intelligent, probably 10 times as smart as I am, but he's got this very interesting mix of background: theology, philosophy, and psychology, and that can make a busy head. But what's so interesting about that is that we were just talking about this idea of innovation and how innovation doesn't happen in specialist silos often. Rather, it happens as a result of this cross-disciplinary understanding. And what I appreciate about each of you, both of you, is the fact that you've got multiple different backgrounds, a medical school dropout with a love for tech, engineering, but then this interesting business transition into consulting. I mean, that's a formidable bunch of learning that then takes place, and you get innovative products like potentially Bridgement and some of the other products that you're going to be pulling out. I'm interested to understand this, though, about each of you. What kind of entrepreneur are you? Because there's different types of entrepreneurs who thrive at different points in a business as well. So you've called yourself a tinkerer. You know? And I'm interested to explore that. Simon, let's go to you first and get your voice back into this conversation. What kind of entrepreneur do you think you are?
So I really enjoy the creative side and being able to actually build something and ship it. I think that's really important. I don't think the idea means too much. I think the ability to actually bring something to market
to execute,
more important.
Okay.
That's why I always kind of laugh when people are wanting you to sign like NDAs before they share the idea. Because invariably the next year you're going to hear the same idea from them and they haven't done anything. So definitely the ability to execute is something that I enjoy.
I started a business when I was, I think, how old was I, 17 or so, and I went and shared it with a mentor of mine who was a management consultant and quite a well-regarded consultant. He said, you need to move now. Stop dreaming and using, ruminating about the idea, and move now, because 10 other people out in the world, maybe 100, maybe 1,000 have had this exact same idea and they're just not moving. They're not moving quick enough. So to your point, go to market. MVP, minimum viable product, create. And so you're that guy.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Okay, interesting. I enjoy it.
Okay, very nice. The tinkerer. Where does that place you on the spectrum of entrepreneur?
Yeah. So it reminds me of a book I read a while ago by Linda Rottenberg, who was the one of the founders of Endeavor. Are you familiar with the organization?
I am, yes.
So in the book, she speaks about four entrepreneur types, and I'm trying to remember what they were. I think it was a diamond, a star, a rocket, and a transformer. And in terms of those four personality types for entrepreneurs, I definitely consider myself on the sort of rocket transformer side of things.
Okay.
Examples of those being, on the rocket side, it's like Jeff Bezos. It's guys that are looking to reach ultimate efficiency and constantly improve, and transformers being like Howard Schultz and others who will take existing concepts and improve them.
Yeah, and just iterate.
Exactly.
Iterate, yeah.
Compared to the diamonds and the stars being like Elon Musk, who just creates completely new, amazing things, completely disruptive, and Richard Branson, who are the diamonds, like the big personalities and trendsetters. Mm. I don't really consider myself either of those two. So definitely much more of a transformer.
So process of elimination says I'm one of these others.
No,
right?
So it's definitely around, you know, I'm interested in, you know, constantly improving, automating, increasing efficiency, simplifying. I'm not one of these loud,
obnoxious.
Know. Yeah. I don't want to say that, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No. But yeah. But certainly, personalities that are loud and proud and out there. I think that's what I've heard you say. The place that you're describing, though, which is this constant need for improvement and efficiency, that can be a busy place. That can be an exhausting place. Just a word to our entrepreneur listeners out there who are interested in understanding how you rejuvenate. How do you pull away from a business, which is often it's a baby, it's a child that constantly needs your care, or at least you think it does. How do you take a break?
I think that's really important. I think particularly when it's a small startup, and obviously there's a lot of pressure. I think you've got to look to sustainability. And overworking and then, you know, burning out is not going to help anyone. So I really try and switch off over the weekend as much as possible.
What does switching off mean, though? So, because it's difficult for people to switch off. They can move into a different environment, but how do you actually switch off? So I'm just thinking about all those others that are similar to you that are hearing and saying, I can see myself reflected in Simon, but they can't switch off. How do you do that?
I really enjoy reading books.
Okay.
So that's a nice escapism. And also try and be really conscious about how much screen time you've got.
Mm, okay.
Which is not easy. Mm. It really isn't. Particularly with the new, you know, the new iPhone giving you prompts of how many hours you've spent on your phone a day. That's a bit depressing. but again, just trying to be really conscious of that.
Okay. And yourself?
Exercising for me is critical. So every morning I'm up around 5:30 and 6 just to do some exercise, and I find that has massive benefits in terms of coping with stress and all the pressures that go with a startup.
Are you saying that you get angry on the way, or is it just it's just the ability to get the juices flowing?
Yeah, exactly. It's just, you know, getting all of those whatever it is, the pain releasing hormones or
endorphins
etc. And also I picked up yoga a couple of months ago, so I do yoga once a week on a Sunday. Okay. I have a bit of a Sunday evening ritual that sort of clears out my head and gets me started or in a good place for the week.
Tim Ferriss is pretty good at that, picking up on what people's rituals are, routines are, and then either copying or improving on that kind of stuff. And it does seem that really successful entrepreneurs are those that can put some form of structure in their lives and disciplines, boundaries. We are running out of time. In fact, we ran out of time about 7 minutes ago, but we carried on going because it's been a very interesting conversation. Maybe we can do just a couple of quick fire questions. And it's been a fascinating conversation so far. I'm interested to know, Simon, who inspires you? So who do you look up to as either role model or an entrepreneur that you would want to be like?
So I'm a big fan of learning from the older tech companies, like Atari.
Okay,
interesting. So I think definitely getting motivation and inspiration from that era is really, really valuable to me.
You have presented a can that we can't open, but I'm interested to open. We'll probably do it off air and then have another discussion around why the older tech companies and why not these new ones. We'll do that maybe in another conversation. Yourself, Daniel, who do you look up to and say, that's my North Star?
I think sort of internationally, Jeff Bezos for me, and it might be a bit cliche, but I really...
It's not a cliche. He's a successful, incredible individual.
Yeah. I love what he does, and I feel like my personality resonates a lot more with him than what someone like Elon Musk and his personality. I mean, I love the work that he's doing, and he is hugely inspirational, but I find Jeff Bezos is definitely that person. More closer to home or locally, I grew up around some really successful businessmen, like Robbie Brosen from Nando's and Ian Furr from Sorbet.
We've had Ian here in the studio.
Both of which are huge sort of inspirations and also mentors.
I remember Rob, we were at the, what hotel was it? The I was going to say Balalaika. It definitely wasn't. Anyway, I was at a hotel. 50 people in the room get to ask him questions. A fascinating conversation. And then Ian, who is also just, I mean, Sorbet has gone from very small to very large very quickly. Fascinating guy. Thank you for sharing. The book that is on your bedside table.
It's Guy Kawasaki's The Art of the Start.
Okay, interesting.
So just finished Nick Harry's Do, Fail, Learn, Repeat.
Okay.
Moving on to some science fiction at the moment.
You've got to let some of that creative stuff flow.
Stimulate some of the creative juices. Exactly.
It's amazing how when I think about all the science fiction and the movies and things that we used to watch when we were younger and how the future is now. It's an incredible place. The worst advice you've ever received, Simon?
I think trying to copy directly from successful people.
Okay.
I think you've got to take it with a pinch of salt. Often that's the nice elevator pitch. It's not necessarily what actually has worked.
Mm-hmm.
So you just got to be kind of wary of that.
Mm, very nice.
That's a good question. I'm struggling to think of something.
Well, let's go with the best advice you've ever received. Maybe the worst will come to you. Best advice you've received.
So definitely around just launching products as quickly as possible, and that if you're not embarrassed when you go live, you launch too late.
Yeah, that's it's a really good phrase.
Yeah.
If you're not embarrassed when you go live, it's too late.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. And I mean, we briefly touched about our website earlier. It's got super limited information at the moment. I am embarrassed every time someone says they look at our website. Yeah. And we're busy revamping it. I mean, it will be up and running soon, the new version with much more information. But it's a matter of just getting out there.
Well, I thought it was actually it was brilliant, because what you can't do is you can't get lost. And that was what was so refreshing about it, was that on many websites you walk down a certain kind of rabbit hole and you don't know where you're at eventually, or into a labyrinth. But in your case, it's very plain, it's very simple. Anyway, I don't know if you should change it. Okay, fantastic. What do you believe your greatest weakness is, Simon? And then maybe you can, Daniel, what's Daniel's greatest weakness? We won't make you do that. But what do you think your greatest weakness is?
I can definitely get bored really quickly.
Okay, how do you compensate for that?
I was kind of hoping you wouldn't answer that follow up.
Okay. All right.
I don't think it's necessarily a terrible weakness, because I can use it to my advantage.
Mm.
But it can be an issue.
Okay. How do you compensate for Simon getting bored easily?
Yeah, I mean, I don't get bored easily. I can definitely stick to something for a long time. In terms of my weakness,
good balance.
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of my weakness, probably. So I'm definitely naturally a perfectionist, which may sound like a good thing, and it is good in certain environments, in university and some corporate environments as well. In a startup, perfectionism is often not good.
It's a killer. It's that time killer.
Exactly.
You're not getting to market again.
Precisely.
Yeah. Okay, very nice. There's a nice balance that is emerging here. Okay, and then finally, if we can... if we look at each other, or look at ourselves rather, and we look at the young 20-year-old future CEO you, the future entrepreneurial you, if you could go back in time and you could speak to yourself, what is it that you would say to yourself, the 20-year-old you, Simon?
So my 20s were a lot further back than Dan's 20s.
Okay.
I think the main thing would be to continue learning. Continuously learn.
Does that mean that at some point, when you reflect on your journey, you weren't learning? You stopped?
I think there's definitely been gaps. I did spend a couple of years in corporate purgatory. So,
can be purgatory,
which they do tend to kind of knock out any kind of dream of learning or moving forward, which is silly. But again, having my own business, it forces you to learn the whole time, which is definitely something that I've enjoyed doing.
Okay, so avoid corporates. For you specifically?
No, I think maybe for everyone, but I mean, that's a separate discussion.
Okay, cool. But continuous learning.
For me, it probably would be two things. One is just start sooner, start earlier.
Okay.
I wish I had delved into entrepreneurship earlier on. I feel like a bit of a fraud that I don't have a story about selling toys at high school, yeah. You know, like many other entrepreneurs do have. So I wish that I'd sort of started just earlier, not necessarily in school, but definitely earlier on in my career. And I think also, in the early stages of the business, you see a lot of stuff happening and the roller coaster of emotions that I spoke about, the highs are pretty high and the lows are also pretty low. And I think I would just tell myself, whatever you think is, you may think something is so important or so critical and is always, really bad if something happens, whatever. And the majority of the time, a year later, it's just, you realize like actually, you shouldn't have been worrying about that. So if I could go back, I would say, don't worry so much about those things.
Okay. Start earlier. Don't worry about don't sweat some of the small stuff. Yeah. I guess you could use that phrase. Sometimes the small stuff doesn't feel like small stuff in the moment though.
Exactly.
Daniel Simon, co-founders of Bridgement. Thank you so very much for being in studio with us. Thank you for sharing. And thank you for what you do. You're filling a gap which is so important and necessary, especially at this particular point and time in our country where we need entrepreneurs to succeed. And if cash flow is one of the reasons we don't succeed, thank you for doing what you're doing. We really appreciate it. Thank you for being in the studio.
Thanks, Gareth. Thank you. It's been great.
All right, that's all we have time for this week. We'll see you same time, same place next week. Go to cliffcentral.com or future-ceos.com and you can listen to over 450 different conversations, from CEO conversations all the way through to entrepreneurs that are doing incredible things, just like Bridgement here, the Bridgement team with us here today. We will see you next week.
Future CEOs on CliffCentral.com. This is CliffCentral.com.